We now move on to our segment on Muslim communities. Mawlana Yusuf Bimat joins us on the line. Mawlana, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Mawlana, I know we have limited time this evening for the program. You may get straight into it, inshallah.
Jazakallah khairan to you, Muftisab. Yes, dear respected listeners, inshallah ta'ala, today we'll be concluding our discussion on Islam in the East Indies. And today we are focusing particularly on the Muslims in Thailand. And unfortunately, it's just one discussion, one segment that we are dedicating to that of Thailand. The reason being that we have discussed the history to some extent of this region. Now, just to put us all into the picture, if we try and remember the map of Indonesia, Malaysia and Thailand, we have the two main islands of Indonesia, that of Sumatra in the north, lying at a 45 type of degree angle, and south of that is Java. Then we have the Moluccan Straits, and on the other side we have a long peninsula with Singapore right at the bottom tip, Malaysia north of that. And on the northern border of Malaysia, we have some Malay people who are living within the borders of Thailand. Now, regarding the Muslims in Thailand, there are two different regions that we will be discussing and two different history periods as well. The first is the very one that you have just spoken about, which is in the deep south of Thailand, which is just north of Malaysia, where you have this region of Malay-speaking people, and their Islam goes back to that of the 1450s. If we can remember the discussion on the Kingdom of Malacca, which was the gatekeeper of the Moluccan Straits, and how there was a prince by the name of Parameswara who had accepted Islam, and thereafter he became the beacon that spread it further. So Malacca became the beacon that was now spreading Islam further, and Islam had spread north of Malacca to the northern areas of Malaysia, and even further to that, to an area called Patani. And in the surrounds, and this area accepted Islam in the year 1457, and Islam has been strong and thriving there ever since. So that is the south, and that's the one region of Muslims. And then we have the rest of Thailand, especially the further north like Bangkok and the surrounds. And this has historically been a Buddhist region, and Islam only arrived there in most of these regions in the last two centuries possibly, or maybe 150 years ago, due mainly to immigration. So let's tackle the history of the south first. In the past, there have been the United Thai Kingdom, which was established in the mid-14th century and was known as the Kingdom of Siam, where it reigned for approximately 600 years until the year 1939, when they had a revolution, a bloodless revolution, and where democracy was introduced thereafter. So, like most of the kingdoms of East Asia, Siam was built on the cultivation of rice, and they had Buddhism as the core religion of its peoples. They had minimal relations with Muslims living in that area. There were a few Indian Muslims who served as eunuchs in the Thai palace. They were from the Coromandel coast, which is the southeastern coast of India, where Tamil Nadu is today. South of this kingdom of Siam was another kingdom, the kingdom of Patani, and they had the Malay-speaking peoples who had adopted Islam prior to this, and they had remained Muslims. And this Muslim kingdom covered approximately the area of the modern Thai provinces of Patani, Yala, Naratiwat, and much of the northern part of modern Malaysia. And there was obviously between the fighting between the two kingdoms, and eventually in the year 1785, Patani was defeated by Siam and became a vassal state of theirs. Just south of them, there were other Malay states. There were independent sultanates until the British started asserting influence over them in the late 1800s. And when this occurred, then the frontier between these states and the Siamese was largely vague and not very well defined. However, in the 20th century, Thailand began competing with the British over Malaysia and over these Malay states. So in 1909, there was a negotiation between the British and the Siamese, which resulted in the separation of the Malay-speaking states. There were approximately eight of them, four of these states that were ruled by a Siamese kingdom were ceded to the British, and which subsequently became part of Malaysia. And the remaining four Malay states remained under the control of the Siamese and consequently became part of modern-day Thailand. And that is basically how Muslims comprise Thailand's largest religious minority, and they are concentrated mainly in the southernmost provinces of Narathiwat, Pattani, Yala and Satun. So looking at Thailand today, they have a population of about 68 million people. The majority are obviously Buddhists, who will make up about 87%. Muslims are only 12%, approximately 7.5 to 8 million Muslims. That's obviously, once again, we realize how minuscule we are in terms of the Ummah here in South Africa. So most of the Muslims in Thailand are rural people. They live in close-knit communities and in small villages. Their main industries is fishing and rubber and rice farming. And tourism has taken a grip in the southern regions, which is the more beautiful regions, coincidentally, with those, you know, white-sanded beaches and palm groves and turquoise waters. So tourism is on the increase in the southern regions, in the central and southern regions. Looking at the demographics of the Muslims today, the vast majority, about 75 to 85%, are found in the south, in those areas which we just discussed. And there are also large concentrations in other places, mainly around Bangkok, the capital. Muslims are also found in smaller numbers in the central southern regions of the country, and they have their own small communities. The Muslims of Thailand are made up of different ethnicities. We have the indigenous Thai, who are Thai people who have either accepted Islam or through intermarriage with Muslims, or they are hereditary Muslims as well. And they live mainly in the central and southern provinces. We have also Muslims who are the Malay Muslims, which will make up the majority. They are known colloquially as the Yawi people, and they speak a distinct dialect of Malay, which is obviously not understood by the Thai, and which makes them very different to the Thai population. We have the Chinese Muslims, who are known as the Chin Ho, and they are also found in the northern parts of Thailand. And there are a number of other Muslims who have come in either as refugees or as economic migrants, such as the Rohingya, people from Burma, from Nepal, and from the other regions who live very close by to Thailand. In terms of the number of masajids that are found throughout the country today, there is a figure of 3,500, which could be a bit more or less, most likely more than that, masajid in the country. There are at least 100 masajid in the capital, in Bangkok. And there are a number of Muslim schools throughout the country, particularly, obviously, in the south, where the majority of the Muslims are. In terms of the overall relationship between Muslims, the government, and the royal family, and this is in terms of what I have come across, so I must add my disclaimer, I've tried to separate them into the positives and the negatives, because they are differing versions of what exactly is the situation. In terms of the positives, we have a very old Sheikh al-Islam of Thailand, a title given to different ulama of the time. For the past 400 years, they have a Sheikh al-Islam who is known in their language as the Chularat Chamantri. And that's the title given to the Sheikh al-Islam. The first person to be appointed to this office was a man by the name of Sheikh Ahmed, who was appointed in one of the previous kingdoms in the year 1611. And since then, there are successive Shuyukh al-Islam, and today we have the 16th Shaykh al-Islam, who is now found in Thailand today. So this is a concession or a recognition of the Muslims by the kingdom of by the Siamese kingdom, and we still have the king in Thailand today. So this is a recognition on behalf of the king. So this tradition still carries on till today. And this Sheikh al-Islam, he has authority to administer all the Islamic affairs of the Muslims in the country. And he is chosen by the king, himself, and the king would now give him the authority to decide how he would like to go about Islamic matters in the country. The king has also provided money for translating the Quran into the Thai language, and he also makes himself present at the Maulid celebrations which the locals celebrate in Thailand. They've also formed the Central Islamic Council of Thailand, and obviously the presiding officer is none other than the Sheikhul Islam, the Chularaj Chamontri. And the government has recognized the Muslims, they've given them financial assistance for Islamic education institutions, assistance with some of the construction of some of the masajid, and they've also opened up Islamic banks and have made halal food a little bit easier for the Muslims, with many of the food in Thailand being packaged as halal regardless of who's really consuming it. There's also been Muslims in politics as well. At present, or quite recently, there were at least 7 Muslim senators and 21 Muslim members in the House of Representatives. And overall, it can be said that Thailand enjoy freedom to teach and practice Islam according to their own tenets. So that's in terms of the positives. In terms of the negatives for Muslims in Thailand, in terms of the negatives for the Muslims who are living in the South has an old tradition of conflict with the government based in Bangkok, and the South is basically the hotbed of all the trouble and violence which we might have heard or come across sometime in the recent past. So just giving you a little bit of background to the Muslims in the South, since the 1930s, the government has tried to assimilate the Malay people to make them more Thai in nature. They imposed upon them the Thai language and clothing, and closed down community schools teaching Islam. This was obviously followed by resistance by the religious leaders, who demanded a petition for a federal structure that will allow them to preserve the area's distinctive culture within Thailand. And the leader at the time, was Mr. Songram, he discriminated strongly against the Malay culture and language, which ultimately led to the Malay separatist movement in southern Thailand, where they were clamoring for their own state and to be, so that they may remove themselves from the country of Thailand. The same ruler who used to discriminate against them, he ordered the arrest of the Thai Malayan leader, whose name was Haji Sulong, and approximately 2,000 Muslims had fled south thereafter. The Muslims refused to assimilate in the demanded language or religious practices by the government, and things seemed to be only getting worse. However, in 1963, things began to improve when the government sent teams to the less developed Muslim communities of the South, and the drainage and water infrastructure was improved, and the policies were relaxed, and it seemed to be working well. However, this was relatively short-lived. A few years later, in the year 1975, 11 people were killed and 44 were wounded when a bomb exploded in a Muslim demonstration where all of the Muslims were killed, and a group of radical Thais were responsible for the attack. 2 years later, another bomb explodes, and this is now in the near presence of the royals while they were on the visit to the Yala province, and a radical Muslim group was responsible this time. And then as democracy expanded throughout Thailand in the 1980s and 1990s, Muslims began to play a more prominent, a more assertive role in the local and national administrations. And at the same time, there was a strong Islamic resurgence in Thailand. And it was not only a political factor, but also had a strong interest in the ritual demands of Islam and the religious way of life. And this brought about Islamic ideas, more madrasas, and the way Islam was viewed began to become more of a problem and more of a challenge for the authority. And they decided to impose the Thai language and secular schools even more. So this was all on the one hand in terms of politics. And coupled with this, there were a lot of inequalities in terms of education, in terms of religious tolerance. And unfortunately, Pattani and this particular region in the south has been the victim of lots of violence because of these political and social factors. And there's been resistance by the minority, by the Malay-speaking people, and this has led to the rise of the separatist thinking. Unfortunately, they've been exposed to violence, and that has claimed the lives of more than 2,000 people since the year 2004. So quite recently, there's been quite a bit of violence in that region. So to sum up very quickly, we don't have much time, so I'll just try and mention it in a bit more concisely. The situation, like in many parts of the world, is very complex here in the south as well, and many have stated that the crisis actually has less to do with theology and a lot more to do with the failure of domestic political economies. And Allahu A'lam, what exactly, what truly is the reason for the violence and the problems in the south today. For anybody visiting the country, in terms of what they used to see today, in the central southern region, there's a beautiful area called the Krabi region. There's a large Muslim population inhabiting the islands there and on the mainland as well. And it's also now an increasingly popular tourist area of Thailand. And obviously most of this land was bought cheaply by the international hotel groups, and they've built quite a bit of hotels there. In this area, particularly Krabi, there is halal food, there are a number of Muslims, there are masajid there as well. Alhamdulillah, I had the opportunity of teaching in an Islamic school there for some time. It's really beautiful, as we said. Those turquoise waters, really warm waters, really beautiful region. The Muslims, alhamdulillah, are very strong. The effort of Tabligh is carrying on. The men in the main masjids generally come just for the Jummah Salah, but there are other smaller masajids where people attend. And Muslims are basically well known in the area. It's not a fully Muslim area. There are Muslim communities in that area, and they are very easily recognizable. And there are also Muslims from other areas, from Burma, from Nepal, and other regions as well. In the south, I haven't been there, but our respected Ustad Mulana Abbas Sarigat Dam Barakatuh mentioned that he visited Idaru Ulum in the south, or a few of them, which are in actual fact in dire need of financial aid and even a structured syllabus. So people need to direct some financial aid that way as well. There is an Islamic university, the Yala Islamic University in Thailand, which has an Al-Azhar type of syllabus, and they have at least 3,000 students. And there are obviously the very small pondok type of madrasas, which are still prevalent in some areas, where the sheikh would teach some of his students in the more rural communities. I am trying to rush this and to sum it up very quickly, because the adhan would begin in a few minutes. So inshallah ta'ala, I think we would end here inshallah, and we'll bring an end to the discussion on the East Indies with this. And we understand the fascinating link between Arabia, between India, East and Southern Africa as well, with an acute historical link with the East Indies. So alhamdulillah, I hope it was as beneficial to you as it was to me. And inshallah ta'ala, as we said, we will carry on sometime in the future inshallah.
Mullah, certainly we appreciate your time. All the podcasts of the 8 episodes, I think, have been loaded onto the Radio Islam website, and we do direct listeners to listen to the entire series there. We appreciate the valuable information that you've shared with us, and we look forward to the next series, inshallah, perhaps after the month of Ramadan, inshallah.
Jazakallah khairan to you, Mufti Sahib.
Jazakallah khair for your time, for the effort. May Allah reward you abundantly. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.